Welcome to the Big Success Podcast, cutting-edge conversations on business and personal success, as well as how to level up. Here's your host, number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars.
This week for the Big Success Podcast, we have Josh Bardsley. Avalanche is his company. He does amazing things, creating marketing results for definitely the professional services, accountants, attorneys. Now, young man who's already built and sold seven companies, all right? Now, that serial entrepreneurialism doesn't really happen often. Now, I was lucky enough, I met Josh when he was 17, or he met me when he was 17, either way. He's an amazing learner, but he's done it. It's not those people that learn it and just think about it. He gets in there and does it. So his views on success are going to amaze you. The book he's just written on Raise Your Hand Marketing, phenomenal stuff. How he manages and recruits and retains a young audience, millennials, Gen Z, phenomenal stuff. So he's scaling an amazing business around the world from London. Let's go. Let's learn from Josh. So, Josh, first question. It's always simple, but it's not that simple. What is success to you? How do you define success?
Pretty clearly, actually. I'd say that success for me is going to sleep excited to wake up the next day.
All right, tell me more about that. How did you arrive at that? What gave you that thinking as your definition?
Because I realized that when I first started in business, I was chasing money, I was chasing material items, I was chasing everything. And whilst those things are great when you get them, you soon realize that that wasn't kind of your main driver. And for me, just enjoying everything and, you know, going to bed at the end of the day with just a feeling of like, I can't wait to get up again and do this again.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go backwards then a little way. How did you, or when did you choose success? Like, when was it something where you said, you know, I'm going to be successful in life?
I was a kid and I always knew I wanted to do something big. I decided that I wanted to be a lawyer.
How did you decide to be a lawyer? I thought I wanted to be a lawyer too. And that was from watching LA Law. I watched Corbin Burnson. I was like, yeah,
I watched Suits and I wanted to be Harvey Specter. So. but you know, I started studying private equity law at college, and I was like, actually, shit, I want to be on the other side of the table. This sounds fun. And I said, okay, how do I do that? And I need to go learn. And so I stuffed myself in more books than is kind of comprehensible. And just success grew on me, I think. Right. I didn't start out with something in mind. I just wanted to do something big.
Yeah. And was there a time when you decided that? Was there something that happened which made you decide it? Or was it a lesson from family? Or what was it? Because often there's a spark in people that says, and obviously people listening to this podcast or watching this podcast, they've already had that spark at some level.
Yeah, it was very clear, actually. I remember it specifically. It was reading a book that called The Billionaire in Training. And I was like, oh, wow, you can actually make money and you can do different things, right? Yeah, you can do different things. And my dad brought me a signed copy back from the very first event he went to with you back in like 2012. Yeah, and it still says on it, Brad Sugars 2012 or whatever it was. And I think your comment was my next billionaire in training or something. And I was like, damn, this sounds fun and doesn't sound that complicated. It just seems like you got to do the work.
And that is really a very big thing. You know, it is the work. So in your mind then, you know, you've built seven companies, done all that stuff as a young man. How does success happen? What's your formula or what's your methodology to make success a reality?
I've always just, the way that I'd say it is when I went out into the world, I realized that a lot of people were selling pints and delivering half pints. And I said, you could build a great business just by selling pints and delivering delivering a full pint. And I was like, this is interesting because I just look at any company and I think you're not delivering to the level that you could be. And I said, well, I can do this and success will be just been the fact I'm just delivering what I sell. And that happened very quickly. Every business we went into, I just said, okay, how do we just deliver for one and deliver consistently, whether it's in property or in kitchens or whatever. And it just seemed to work. Like that was the model and it grew from there.
Seems ultimately too simple, but it's definitely, I've never tried to complicate success. So let's flip it over then. How does failure teach success?
I had a tricky relationship with failure. I think a lot of kind of type A personalities have a tricky relationship with failure. And I used to beat myself up a lot. It was only from the learnings that I realized that failure was something that everyone always says to me, oh, great, Josh is getting anxious and he's going through a crisis situation because we're going to come out of it with something sick. So I've taught myself to kind of use the 2 or 3 day situation of woe is me to and a problem to create epic thing. I'd say every single amazing thing I've done has always come out of some terrible situation. And I think just enjoying that process, I still hate it, but trying to enjoy that process.
So what's your mindset then? How do you approach it? If something does go wrong or something looks like it's going wrong, how do you approach that to turn it into a success? What do you do in your brain to get that to happen?
So my business partner, Abby, lets me have 10 minutes of hissy emotion. And it's like, okay, time's up. And then it's like, okay, let's have a look at the solution and have a problem. And actually, we kind of go seek them now. My team, the team here at Avalanche, that I teach them, go break shit. Go break stuff and fix it and just break it on purpose. And I think that mantra of success is you'll be very successful if you can just learn to break things that seemingly work and make them better and enjoy that process.
So let's go back then to the success factors and that sort of thing. When you look at success, what do you see as the factors of people who succeed versus those who don't?
Consistency. I think that success is, like, I spent a long time with Sir Terry Matthews when I was a kid. It was about 19. And the first thing he said to me was, you got to be the most persistent person in the world and just not ever stop. And, you know, look at me, I'm 75 years old and I've still not stopped. And he's like, success looks like it's just come out of thin air, but there's a lot of backstory behind it. And I'm sure, you know, you have experience as well. Like one step forward each day, compounding that. And I think Buffett's talked about it. He's like, you know, we just looked up from our desk 50 years later and we had a $600 billion company. It was just, we just kept moving forward every single day. And I think it's just that ability to do that. Just every day, just get up, move forward.
So flip that over. What is it that for the other side? Because like when you worked with like Bill Ackman, learning from Bill and Marshall Goldsmith, obviously the flip side of that is there too. Young, and let's define our advice here just for a second. The millennial generation, Gen Z, how can someone at that level say, okay, let me take the lessons of a 75-year-old and apply them today to success?
Longer, chill out. Like the
explain the, that if, for me. Explain chill out.
Well, when I was younger, my first, I don't like to look backwards, but I probably could be in a far, far further along in my career if I just chilled out. When I was like the first five years of my career, I was so gung-ho on getting successful, making millions of dollars, running around, doing everything that I thought I needed to do that. In reality, I've made a lot of steps forward, but a lot of steps back in that time. And if I just kind of, you know, kept moving forward, chugging slowly, focusing on the principles of consistency, delivering great quality services and products, whatever, I would be, you know, the compound effect would have taken its thing. And Bill, when I worked with Bill, Bill's theory on that was exactly the same. Like, this is all about the compound effect, but I'm going to put 100x multiplier on it. He's like, I'm not interested. It's got to be big or none. And so there's lots of different lessons from lots of different people, but it also always comes back down to be persistent. Whatever you decide to do, don't do it for 6 months and quit. Just, you know, find something you want to do for a long time.
I like it. I like it a lot. You're on the Big Success Podcast. We are here with the Josh Bardsley, and we're going to be coming back and taking a look at marketing. We're going to be taking a look at recruiting. We're going to take a look at managing young people and how to succeed at all of those things.
With over 200 strategies for maximizing cash flow, Brad Sugars' book, The Apprentice Billionaire's Guide to Cash Flow, is the one tool you're going to need in order to maximize your company's profits throughout the course of its growth cycle.
And you're back, Josh Bardsley, Avalanche, amazing company, doing great things for accountants, attorneys, and business coaches around the world, generating leads. I want to look, though, at something that you've become amazing at, and that is, how do you recruit millennials and Gen Z, I guess? You got to add Gen Z into the equation these days.
Yeah, there's so many gens now. It's like, it's trouble to keep up. We've only really hired that age group, to be honest. And it's kind of, they've always kind of hovered around those kind of age groups, sort of 18 to 30. One of the biggest things for me is like, it's only a short, small amount of them really care about money. It's more about like what you can offer them in terms of flexibility. That age group is, they want to know like, okay, can I work from home? They want to know like what benefits they get. They want the community aspect of the business. They want the socials. And I think the biggest thing is if you just run a company where everyone is there and just doing it and going home, you're going to lose people. They want to feel like they're in a friendship circle.
Tell me more about that, the community and the social aspect. How do you succeed at that without going overboard, I guess?
Yeah, this is a hard thing because we've got to the point now where we're quite big in terms of team. So not a huge team, but like 25 people. It's harder to go to the pub with 25 people than it is to go to the pub with 5 people. And so we're having to get a little bit more corporate with the structure. But I think just having a consistent, it being consistent is the key thing. And, you know, celebrating wins, like we always do like a, you know, win of the weeks and bringing people in. We make sure that they're kind of, you're pushing out of their comfort zones. The thing with Gen Z is that they hate going out of the comfort zone. They want to, but they hate doing it. And if you manage them in a way that is like old school management, which is like, you know, can you do this? Can you do this? And I need this done by X, Y, Z time. They do not respond well to that whatsoever. It's more like, hey, what do you think about this? Get their opinion, get them to buy into the solution as their solution as well. And then it gets done. It's like it's their project.
Yeah.
And they'd like to feel like they got ownership of stuff.
So, okay, you're teaching a guy like me, 51 years old, Gen Xer. How do I adjust to recruit these young people then? What have I got to do that's different to what I would have done before?
I think that actually the word needs to come down to recruit or retain. It's relatively easy, I still think, to recruit these people. I think that having an image of your company as a, you know, it has technology, it's fun, it's got big plans. They all want to know about that. They want to know about your big plans for the future. They want to feel safe. Standard stuff, getting them through the doors, pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. How you retain them is probably the harder point because, as you know, like this age group, the average is probably only about 8 months or something in terms of data. So it's retaining them is where you need to be, help them buy into the relationship. You buy into the projects, you give them ownership of things. And that for us is, we've not had anyone leave like from their own accord yet in the last few years in terms of this new model. So we've done a pretty good job of making sure that they feel like they own their process.
Mm. Now, it's funny that you say, you know, as you know, no, I'm 51. I don't know this stuff. Making it social, making it fun, all that stuff is totally different. So what else we got to do to manage and lead the millennials and the Gen Z?
The best thing that we do, and the best thing that I've done with this whole, you know, keeping them, retaining them, making them happy is in team meetings, everyone pitches in and it's everyone's ideas valued no matter what level they're in the company. And there's votes. If you have a project on, you know, let's change this process or let's have this new strategy, everyone in that team will make a decision as a team and they vote in and it's that kind of buy-in. And that could be anything. That could be, you know, what color are we going to make this week's ad? Or like if something simple, it could be anything. Just helping them buy in and making them feel like they're making an impact is really key to them.
Yeah.
And if you do that, they don't just stay, they get the work done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much more energy and effort into that than historically has ever been done. Yeah. All right, let's flip the conversation a little bit. You wrote the book on marketing, okay, about raising your hand. How do we succeed at marketing overall? Then we'll get into some specifics.
Marketing overall, is this a good question? I think that's it could be a very long question, but we'll keep it short. Marketing is, nowadays, you're buying a lifetime relationship. And that's the switch. It's no longer, I'm buying a transaction. I'm buying an initial transaction. You have to buy a relationship because most brands nowadays, even if it's B2B or B2C, the level of opportunity for loyalty with customers has never been higher. People have major loyalty to brands, even, you know, small things. And marketing is very simple. If you just, you know, instead of going out and selling and saying, hey, you know, do you want to buy my stuff? You say, let's have a conversation. You make an offer that, you know, is really something that they need right now. You get to have a lot of conversations and you get to build a lot of relationships. So it's kind of like a switch in, you know, what is marketing success? It's basically you're no longer a hunter, you're a relationship manager, you're a farmer. And if you can do that, make that switch, you'll be successful in any business.
So let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. You mentioned the word conversations, and I think that's become a big thing. You're a big believer in getting conversations that lead to conversions. How do you generate, or how do you succeed at generating a lot more conversations?
Yeah, so most businesses, when they do their initial target market, when they buy their company or start it, they'll say, okay, I have 10,000 people that fit this demographic in London, right? And then all of their marketing is focused on people that want to buy right now. And in most industries, the people that are literally walking around thinking about your product or service right now is very small, maybe 4 or 5%. And so you put all of your effort into that 4 or 5%. So, you know, if your market's 10,000, actually your marketing is only really dealing with 400 or 500, and it's really hard to spot them. So the raise your hand marketing idea is, okay, let's make that switch and let's look at the whole 10,000. And instead of talking about us, let's say, okay, what can we offer that we know everyone in that 10,000 will have, and building something that will give them what they need. And in return, they will engage with us either digitally or physically. And it's, that is the simplest thing in the world to do, and very easy to implement for any company.
It's funny, some people listening going, it's not that simple, Josh. Obviously it is simple to you. So what triggers someone to raise their hand, as you call it?
So raise your hand is just simply you've offered something that they want. So the way that we talk about this in the book and in general marketing perspectives is, first figure out what kind of needs they have. So if we look at B2C, typically there's two things that everyone will walk around having. It's emotion and aspirational, you know, need. Everyone is emotional and everyone's aspirational. In B2B, everyone's got ego and everyone wants exposure. So those are the two things, emotion, aspiration, ego and emotion that we want to create our offer on. And that could be something like we wrote in the book about this Las Vegas Gardens Corporation as a dummy company. And it's like, okay, how do they do this? So they use ego and exposure. They create some sort of offer that, you know, will invite people to grab a free, you know, goodie bags or free talk to them about their garden, be interviewed about their garden. You're leaning on these exposures and leaning on these emotions and leaning on these different aspirational pieces to generate conversations. So in reality, it's just making sure that you give someone what they need. And if you can give someone what they need, they raise their hand. It's that straightforward.
So once you get them to raise their hand, you mentioned the word farming before. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so farming is in a context of this perspective, like, you know, 10,000 years ago, a hunter would be the hero and he would go out and he would, you know, get the prey, and it might be another year before he gets another one, but he's still the hero, and the farmer's the boring one who doesn't, you know, is uncool. The farmer has to sow his seeds and wait 6 months for his success. But when that success comes, it's very consistent. And so most marketing is hunting. You're going out there and you're hoping, you're working on hope to generate business. And whilst it might work every now and again, it's not predictable. And farming allows you to bring predictability. It's a bit boring to start with because you have to do some work and you have to have a lot of conversations and you have to nurture people. And you do that by just simply looking at what they need, and having conversations and, you know, continually offering them what they need. And then when they do think about you, which will be some point down the line, you're the first person that pops into their head. It's that kind of thing. And when we look at, let's look at a hair salon business, right? So hair salon would put an ad out saying, you know, come and have your hair colored with us. Okay, that's a hunting technique. You're kind of hoping that someone is going to come across your ad who wants their hair coloring. Great. If instead you put an ad out and you think, okay, what does every woman want in this town? They all want their hair to look beautiful. Okay, we're going to run an ad that says, come and have a free blow dry with X Hair Salon. It's completely free, 30 minutes. We just want to meet you. And because it solves that problem of the thing that they need, the amount of hands being raised about 10 times what the ad is. And the fun thing is that when that person actually sits down in that chair and has a conversation with the stylist, we found about 70% of them would rebook. So what we're doing is we're buying initial interaction, and we do that by giving stuff away.
Mm.
And that's farming.
So let's flip topics just for a second. Young entrepreneurs, right? A lot of them don't have the confidence to kickstart off, to actually dive in, to actually open the business. What is it that you think is different? What was different for you? Or how do those who dive in actually do it versus those who sit back and wait?
I've never been a sit back and wait kind of guy. So it's difficult for me to understand that kind of mindset. But a business is reality. As soon as you sell something and there's an initial transaction, you have a business. And if you think about it, when I was starting out, my dad was my first client. And then I had another one, and then I had another one, and it all kind of grew from there. And if anyone wants to start a business, it's just like, okay, I would say make sure your first sale is something that you can bring from your own network or people that you know, or your experience in the past. And once you've got that first sale, you can prove your concept. It's pretty straightforward to market and create stuff.
You're on the Big Success Podcast. I'm Brad Sugars. We'll be back in just a moment, and we're going to look at scaling up.
Josh Bardsley is the founder and CEO of his own company, which specializes in helping businesses create a winning culture, develop effective marketing strategies, and increase revenue. He's also a highly sought-after keynote speaker, author, and podcast host. Now, with his insights and expertise being featured in numerous media outlets, we can dive into Josh's journey, his strategies, and insights on how to achieve big success in business and in life.
All right, Josh, let's talk about scaling up. Some of your early businesses you built, just normal size businesses. Now you're into the scale thing. What changed in your thinking?
Fine. Nothing changed my thing. I always wanted to be big, right? But I've got this thing of paying my dues. Like, I think I should pay my dues and I should learn how to build X business before I, try and grab somebody to come help me do it. And I think I may have got bogged down in the learning a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. I think that I could have grown faster, quicker, and that's something that I'm learning now, is that actually, like, the blitz scaling idea, it doesn't need to be perfect. And now my mindset is, okay, we go as big as we can, as fast as we can. And if things break along the way, that's fine. As long as we keep the quality high and keep our customers happy. Like, that's the key thing.
Let's focus in on that. If things break, it's going to be fine type thing. I think a lot of people get panicked about that. Did you have to shift your mindset? What happened to make that your reality?
I had to break a lot of stuff.
and what? And realize you didn't die from it, or what? What's the
theory? It comes back down to the crisis thing, I think just over years of being punished over and over again, you kind of learn that actually all my good stuff comes out of failure and crisis and things breaking. So I'm not afraid of it. I don't like it, but I'm not afraid of it. And I know that actually, in order to scale, I need to break things. So I need to break my capital raise. I need to break my marketing. I need to break these things constantly. And I need to screw up. And if I do that, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to come out of my pod with a great idea to fix it. Mm. And honestly, when I talk to anyone about scale, like yourself and or Terry and everyone, it's if you settle for $1 million, then you'll be at 700 for a long time. You want to build a $1 million company, it's you're stuck at $700,000-$800,000. If you set your intentions and you set your focus and say, actually, do you know what? I'm going to build $100 million company. And in the case of our conversation a year ago, it was $5 million. What are you doing? $1 billion. Let's work on $1 billion. And if we hit $600 million, damn. So it's just a mindset shift.
Yeah. So when you talk to people, because when you have conversations and you show people a billion-dollar business plan, does it scare them, excite them? What's your reality around showing that and sharing that with people?
I've been burnt a lot with this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the key learnings for me in the last few years is pick the people that you share your vision with correctly. And because I used to share everything with everyone, in the company, especially, and in businesses, and some people just wouldn't get it, and it would do more harm than good. Mm. And I would always, I have my team now, they're like, Josh, different group. So it's like, I think, if you need to have people around you that are going to love the idea of a billion-dollar company. Mm-hmm. And if you've not got that around, you need to find it. Because if you don't, you ain't going to get there. You need someone that's going to help support you.
So if I was to say Josh's top two or three lessons around dreaming big, what are the top two or three things that you say to make me dream big? This is what happened, or this is what I had to learn.
Experience it.
Explain that one more.
I think that going and putting myself in environments where I was around the people that had these amazing stories and amazing experience, and going to places like different events or things that I wanted to get into, like Formula One and different sports and different things that I just dream about, and going on the boat stuff, getting there and talking to people, they're actually real nice most of the time. And successful people want to share why they're successful. And I got into a lot of extremely insane situations just by asking. Mm. And I've traveled the world. I've done amazing things. I've talked to billionaires. I've lived in a house with one. I've done all these things. And that just came from me being like, you've done this. Can I learn from you? And they always say yes. Every time.
All right. Let's go into the lightning round. Josh, your opinions, fast, short, sharp answers. How do you succeed at goal setting?
I have a funny relationship with goals, but I would say that my goal setting needs to be done in a way where it can be tracked back to the activities you do today. So as long as you can start with the end in mind, you can track it back to right this moment, and it's got daily management tools to get you there, fine. If you're not, I wouldn't bother.
How about self-development? How do you succeed at self-development?
Do as much of it as possible. I think when your energy's high in business at the start, that's like your absolute critical moment, because it will diminish. Like your love of books and education, it will diminish. Like my appetite for learning now is not the same as it was 5 years ago. I read 15 of your books in about 3 weeks in college because I had nothing else to do, and I loved it. And it's so when you've got that critical moment, get in, just take everything in as possible. And then the key thing with maintaining self-improvement is discipline. I treat myself discipline as like I'm training for an Ironman. So it's in my calendar. It has to be done. It's like I'm trained. I'm going to the gym.
Yeah.
And I've got to the point now, my education has changed. So I consume an awful lot with video and audio. And so I try to do more things. I try to do them all at the same time.
How do you succeed at having fun, like enjoying it in the journey, not just doing the work?
Some of my team would say I'm not quite there yet. come back to my marketing theory again. It's aspiration. Like I like to do aspirational things and take myself out of environments and go to things. And I always had a dream of going to the F1. I go to the F1, and instead of going to normal F1, I'll go and sit in the paddock club and just experience these amazing things. And it just recenters me. I'm not one for being extravagant too often, but like you need to kind of recenter your why, and like why I'm doing this is very important.
How do you succeed at wealth?
That is something I love. So discipline, spend far less than you earn, and be diligent with your budgeting. Like I am earning my way right now. I spend as little money as possible, and I'm doing that through discipline. I could spend a lot more money than I'm spending right now, but I have the same budget I had 3 years ago. And I'm definitely a lot more wealthy now than I was 3 years ago. And I've said to myself that I'll continue to do that until for the next 10 years. And I think discipline with wealth, and you'll agree with me there, is, I think you said to me, Josh, don't worry about it right now. Just make it for your 40s.
Yeah. Mark Cuban's idea of live like a student for the rest of your life. Very important. Yeah. How do you succeed at health?
See, being an entrepreneur is you tend to lean on convenience. And in a city, convenience doesn't always mean healthy. And I learned that the hard way. And you know, had a few issues with health in the past, and it's mostly comes down to what you consume. And you know, I tend not to drink caffeine anymore and things like that. And I always have a race or something that I'm doing. So I'm doing an Ironman in June. I know that's kind of crazy, but it keeps me actually working out, because I'm as you said, a goal hungry person. If I don't have something that I'm working towards, I won't do it. So, you know, have goals with your health and work towards them.
Brilliant. Josh, final question. What's the best advice or the best quote you ever read on the subject of success?
The best advice I've ever heard and continue to come back to is two things. One is just focus every day on putting one step forward. Don't worry about everything that's going on around you. And that was from the main man, Warren Buffett. And the other one was, spend far less than you earn.
Simple stuff. I love it. This is the Big Success Podcast. You've been listening this week. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest. Click on all the links, connect with Josh, learn his marketing stuff. Be good, keep learning, and we'll be back and you'll get more success next week. And that's the Big Success Podcast for today. Hopefully you took a lot of notes, hopefully you learned a bunch, and hopefully you're going to take action on it. BS, Brad Sugars, Big Success, take action. Check all the show notes for all of the links. So I make sure that you have links to every single thing that every speaker has in our show notes. Check them now, click the links, take advantage of it, and I'll speak to you again next time on the Big Success Podcast.
You've been listening to the Big Success Podcast with the number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars. To learn more about how to achieve business and personal success, as well as how to level up or listen to past episodes, visit www.bradsugars.com.